This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 16th of January, 1962. The title of this lecture is Naples.
Okay, what's the date? All right. 16th Jan, 6-2-80-12. Now, it's a moot question whether I lecture you today about 3D or 3D crisscross, or security checking, 2010. It's a moot question, because the difficulties of both are exceeding you enormously. In fact, it's almost, have you ever heard of them? I don't mean it's sarcastic, and I never label. I gave you low-toned lectures. I gave you a gap between what you're doing and a great as gap between what you were doing and what is being done in the field, and that's a pretty wide gap. There's a big lot of stuff you could be getting there and pitching on. Now, we have various things that would assist us, and these things are normally summed up in a subject of technology. Now, technology is what you ought to be studying. Technology is divided into two parts, and these two parts are how you do it, what motions you go through, and what you do. How you do it and what you do. Don't try to wrap up technology under one heading of, well, it's technical. How do you run a session? And what do you run in the session? And these are two different subjects, and they are very broadly different subjects. Now, actually, I'm torn in several different directions in giving you a lecture today, because I've got so much data to give on security checking and on 3D crisscross and other things like this, and the anatomy of the goals problem mass, which we have a lot more data on, which you'll be very interested in, and so forth. But it's very difficult for this in a very orderly groove. How'd you get this stupid? I mean, you must have worked on it, you know. You must have worked on it. Somewhere or another on the track, you must have said to yourself, they shouldn't know, and that includes me. Somewhere. But I wish you just hadn't done it so often. If you'd just done it less frequently. Now, of course, it's a good thing that you do have withholds, some of you. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. Think of the cities that would be destroyed. The planet's burst into pieces if you hadn't withheld here and there. We're not trying to teach you to not have withholds. If you have an impulse, just do it. We're not trying to teach you to do that. We're trying to get you out of the tangle you've got yourself into. What do you mean doing, having such terrible impulses? That's the tangle we're trying to solve in a PC. How come the PC has these impulses that he then has to withhold? See, now that's the problem. It isn't the problem of withholding. Now, if you took all the withholds off of a born killer, see, and you didn't remedy the case in any other way at all, I could look at a few of you right now. I'm not mentioning any names. I don't want to be personal. But just supposing you didn't withhold some of the things you think of. Just supposing. Immediately we get a cough here. All right. The withhold is, of course, that area of motionlessness which follows that area of doingness which you shouldn't ought to have. And the whole study of withholds comes about from shouldn't ought to have done it. You see? If you shouldn't ought to have done it, you then begin to withhold it, which of course classifies action under the headings of things you should have done and things you shouldn't have done. Well, what do you know? There's a whole bunch of things called laudable withholds. Now, it was very laudable of you not to sink the battleship. This was very laudable. It's very laudable of you not to have gotten angry at the waitress. Yeah, it's laudable. But a laudable withhold, of course, is always something that society expects of you. Providing you've got these other impulses which society has classified, whatever society you happen to belong to, has classified as shouldn't ought to have done it actions. Now, it all depends on where you was brung up. Some people were brought up and some people were brung up. Exactly what you shouldn't ought to be doing. Now, the whole subject of that is not the subject of philosophy, it's the subject of mores. It's what's moral. To whom and where and what group, under what circumstances, is a laudable action, and it ought to be withheld. Now, you have then all withholds divided and all actions divided into laudable actions and laudable withholds. And the laudable withhold goes along with the undesirable action, and the laudable action goes along with an undesirable withhold. Well, figure it out. That's true, isn't it? So you was always horsed between two horses. See? Is it laudable to went and done it? All right. Well, then it's not laudable to withhold it. All right, if it's laudable to withhold it, then it must be coupled with you shouldn't ought to have done it. It shouldn't be done. You see? So one of the pair of the overt or the withhold is always laudable and always desirable. And the other is, it's undesirable. See, if you got a laudable withhold, you must have had a desirable action. In other words, a laudable withhold is an undesirable action. Get it straight. Laudable withhold, undesirable action. Desirable action, on the other hand, of course, you have a bad withhold. For instance, it is laudable in some societies to hand out money indiscriminately. See, that's very laudable. That means you're generous, you believe in Allah, all kinds of other actions. You must hand out money in all directions. And if you withhold it, if you withhold any money, you're, of course, a miser. See, you're a cheapskate. You're a miser, you see. Now, that is the punishment they assign in order to, you see, that's a derogatory withhold because the action is considered by the group to be desirable. Take any given action. Let's take kissing a girl. Just take that as an action. I don't know whether you're familiar with this action or not. But kissing a girl, all right. Now, let's take a look at the various societies and their various regards of it. You find out it'd be very interesting. The Marriage Counselors Society of Los Angeles. Of course, this is a very laudable action. And therefore, you are a very evil man if you don't kiss a girl. If you're not the type of man who kisses girls, then you're an evil man. That's according to the mores of the marriage counselors. Because, of course, the more girls that get kissed, the more business they have. Elementary. Elementary. All right. Now, let's take the Sex is Evil Society. New York City, the Sex is Evil Society. All right. Every time you kiss a girl, you see, you are evil. So you're an evil man because you kiss a girl. Now you go down to Hollywood, for instance, and kiss a girl, they think you're crazy. I didn't mean to, as a crack. So forth. I didn't mean as a crack, derogatory. In the first place, it couldn't be derogatory because you can always explain cracks about Hollywood, same basis. It isn't critical. It isn't a critical thought because it's true. You hear that? Now, there's just one action, and the fellow who does it in one group is evil, and the fellow who doesn't do it in a group is evil. It's a case of you can't win. But there's another side to this game, too, you see. The Washington of withholding kiss girls in New York, they're a good man, you see. And in California, you see, why you're a marriage counselors association, why you're a good man if you kiss girls. In New York, anti-sex society, you see, you're a good man if you withhold kissing girls. Now, between these two things, you get confused. In a war, there's nothing quite as upsetting to a company officer as a soldier who won't shoot enemy troops. It's very upsetting. Very upsetting. The War Department in the United States, and I'm sure in England, has often sat up all night long compiling statistics as the number of unfired weapons or weapons fired in the air at no target during actions of World War II. It's a terrible worry to them, particularly when the figure gets above 50. When the figure gets above 50%, you see, why, that the taxpayer has devoted his blood and treasure to manufacture bullets, and there's this chuckle-headed soldier sitting on the front, won't even pull the trigger. You see, so this is a bad withhold. Very bad business, you see. It's a rough thing. A fellow shouldn't do it, you see. He shouldn't withhold that bullet. All right. Now, let's say he's even a member of the police force, and he goes down the middle of Main Street, and he fires off a gun, the same officer, different period of time, may then be sentencing him for having shot a gun, arresting and sentencing him for having done this action. So the time it is done has something to do with it. Not only the society, but time this is done, time of the action, tells you whether or not the withhold is desirable or the action is desirable. So it's no wonder you get confused. You get it all straightened out, you see, that certain society called the United States population considers it lawful if you fire a gun at a man in time of war, and considers it evil if you refuse to fire a gun at a man at time of war. That's in time of war. Now, in time of peace, the same society, the same people, consider it laudable to withhold firing the gun and evil to fire the gun. See? So you get confused. So your PC gets confused. Your PC, after a while, doesn't know whether it is laudable to act or to withhold. And if you were to ask a PC bluntly, now, is it best to reach or to withhold yourself from reaching? Which is best? Which of these two actions would be the best? Is it better to reach or to reach from reaching? Now, what is the answer to that question? And if the person asked it, if he were really forced to solve it, would go around the bend. Because it all has to do with the mores and the time and place. What group would consider it, you see, when? That's the anatomy of the situation. In other words, you've got a situation going here where you cannot say that at all times one certain action, let's take one action, there is no action that at all times is good in all places. And there is no withhold that at all times should be in action or withheld. There is no one certain withhold that at all times must be withheld everywhere. So you cannot say that there is a bad withhold or a good action or 100% bad action or a 100% bad withhold. It all depends on from what point do you view this. Now, it's viewed with a worm's eye view of the wog. And if you ask a wog these questions, you've had it. Because he can never answer this question. He will never answer it from one end of the world to the other. If you say, tell me an action that is at all times good in all places. Tell me something that should be withheld in all places at all times. by everything, everyone. Tell me such a withhold. You can't, from a wog's eye view. We must be dealing, when we're security checking, with another factor. We must be dealing with something else. We can't then say he has withholds and feel cheerful about it, or feel depressed about it, either way. Because good men probably have more withholds than bad men, which therefore makes everybody very puzzled, and they don't want to become good, because they know that all good men never communicate. And by this definition, the goodest men are out in the cemetery. You see, so everybody gets in a ball up about this. So we must be doing something else than pulling all withholds from all people at all times. All withholds. See, we must be doing something different. And we are. We are remedying the compulsion or obsession to commit actions which have to be withheld. In other words, we're remedying unreasonable action. And that's all we're doing. And that covers security checking like a blanket. You see, you're remedying unreasonable action. That's all. Now, if we were fixing somebody up so that he would fit very well into the society of the Calicahoochee Indians, we would have to study up the Calicahoochee Indians and find out what they considered to be undesirable actions, remedy these in the PC, and he would be considered a very good man indeed amongst the Calicahoochee Indians. The only trouble is that we cannot guarantee that our PC is going to pick up a body with the Calicahoochee Indians. This we cannot guarantee. They probably, by the time they get around to it, will have been totally wiped out by the United Nations. The United Nations hears of it these days. They exterminate it. This is the modus. That's the word is out these days. I don't mean to say anything bitter against the United Nations. Nobody is fonder of cooperative see any of the United Nations, so I don't like them much, but that's all right. Let's just pass over that silently with a moment of bowed heads. We can't guarantee that the United Nations will not have gotten there first, you see, or somebody else will have gotten there. We make no guarantee where this PC is going to go next. There he sits in the PC's chair, or there he sits in the academy, for that matter, and, well, times are uncertain, and the generals they got on this planet aren't up to my standards, and they'll have to blow the whole top off the place at any minute, or some auditor from Burbank or something like that, so I would get hold of this person next, and the person does a bunk and passes Arcturus and thinks one of its planets would be a good place to stop. In other words, we cannot predict where our PC is going to land within the next century. Well, as he has 200 trillion years behind him, the probabilities that he will land in different places in the next 100 years are rather certain. He's been landing in different places for 200 trillion years, and to say that he is now never going to land in another place is idiocy. He for sure is going to land in different places elsewhere. He's going to be in different societies than he is in now. Therefore, there is only one thing that you can rehabilitate in the PC. Just one thing that you can rehabilitate in the PC. And that is his ability to determine his own actions. And that's all you can rehabilitate. You can rehabilitate nothing else. Do you follow that? All you can do is make him governor of his own deeds. And if he can be made to be governor of his own deeds, we have then done the job for all societies and all places. And we have also rehabilitated totally 100% communication for this person. Because communication isn't, as some people would like to think, a constant long blah, which has started several thousand years ago and is still going on. You see, a lot of people have that, about 50% of the people have that. Or, on the other hand, one total silence that began a long time ago and will be silent for a long time to come. You see, communication is neither one of these things. Communication is the ability to control an outflow or stop it. It is to run stark change and stop on outflowing and inflowing actions. Control of communication. Now, control of communication, of course, downgrades into heavier mest as control of reach, so that you have the ability to start, change, and stop outflowing and inflowing reach. The ability to do this is, of course, the thing that you are rehabilitating. What your PC is afraid of is that one fine day he will be in Piccadilly Circus or Times Square and take off all his clothes. Now, you recognize that it's perfectly all right to take off all one's clothes in one's bedroom, or even some other bedrooms. that is perfectly all right. But it is not all right to take off all one's clothes in the middle of Piccadilly Circus. One of the reverse mechanisms of the human mind is that a person can be so worried about doing this that he will begin to think about nothing but withholding this. So he goes around 24 hours a day, except when he's asleep. And he doesn't sleep much either, because he might walk in his sleep. You could even take care of that, you see. And he is afraid that one of these days he's going to go down in the underground of the subway, take a train, and go to the exact center of the city, stand on the sidewalk, and take off all his clothes. He's pretty sure that sooner or later he's liable to do this. And he becomes totally concentrated on doing all he can to not do it. And you could devote a person's whole life to not performing that one action. You could actually train a person to a point. You could get him so worried, you could get him so obsessed, you could get him so upset, you could get him so concentrated on this one point that he would never think about anything else. Of course, at that moment, you would classify him as insane. He couldn't even remember to eat. He couldn't remember to go to bed. He would walk around all the time thinking to him about, must not go down to Times Square and take off all of my clothes. Do you see that? Well, now, what he is doing then is practicing a consistent withhold of an undesirable action. And most of his attention is wrapped up in restraining himself from performing this undesirable action. And it's an attention trap to end all attention traps. All right, reverse of it is true, too. He must remember to do a desirable action. You could get somebody, and you could train him completely that he must never pass a beggar without putting a coin in the beggar's cup. And that terrible bad luck will ensue if he fails to put a coin in a beggar's cup. All right, that's fine. That's a very laudable outflow, isn't it? Only a cheapskate would not do that. Only a miser would fail to perform this very desirable action, you see. All right, now let's multiply it. Let's multiply it. Let's make it so that he begins to believe that if he doesn't do this action at least once every day, that he will be ostracized and cauterized. He must do this in order to live. He must outflow this action. He must give to charity. If you think I am being a little bit archaic here, just to this degree, that this particular obsession is most resident in the Middle East and was most prevalent about 1,500 years ago. Boy, well, 1,400 years ago, 1,300 years ago, 1,200 years ago, they were really working on this hard, you know. Alms for Allah, you know, and so on. And the Quran is all written around how thou must give in order to be lucky, you know. But anyway, it still exists today to some degree. But let's supposing that we train this guy on an obsessive compression basis, racked him up one way or the other, gave him electrons, and made him plant others to do it. He's got him real set and gave him a bunch of failures in planting others so that he must put a coin in a beggar's cup every day. Now let's speed it up. He must put a coin in a beggar's cup every hour. Now let's really fix it up so that it must be a different beggar every hour. And he has to keep a map then and a roster of all the beggars of the city. In order to form this action. Otherwise, the sky will cave in or the museum will not hold up the minaret. Well, you see, that's an obsessive action. That's an obsessive action. Now, what would happen to most of the citizens of Western society today if they failed to come to work in the morning? That's a desirable outflow, isn't it? They have to outflow a body from home and put it down at work, right? Correct? And on this, we have accompanying economic disaster, social disgrace, denial of all things that go along with having a position and a salary in the society. You see? All right, if we enforced that to that degree and then we withheld it in that degree, we'd probably have a fellow who wouldn't have any clothes, so he'd be in the middle of Piccadilly Circus out at Aeon, whether he liked it or not. Now, if we educated the same man to never outflow any money and never to give any money, we've educated him both ways, 100%, and we got this exactly and equally balanced, we'd have an insane ridge, and he'd have the glee of money or something. Now, if we had this fellow totally educated to believe that he must never go away from home because he might go down to Piccadilly Circus and take off all his clothes, but that he must go away from home in order to have money to buy clothes, every time he went across the lintel, he would not know whether he was heading for Piccadilly Circus or work. Which way was he going? Was he going to Piccadilly Circus? Oh, no, he better not go to Piccadilly Circus. And after a while, he forgets why he is leaving home, and he just doesn't leave home anymore. And you find a tremendous number of people who cannot leave their houses. Well, you can run houses in vain on them without curing this phobia. You can remedy ravenous of houses and everything else. Why? Because the trouble with them is not the house. It's Piccadilly Circus. They don't know why they mustn't leave home, because they've now forgotten that they might go down to Piccadilly Circus, you see, and take off all their clothes. And because they might do that, then they better not go out of the house. But they've forgotten why, what they're liable to do, and therefore you have a covered overt with a covered withhold, and you've got the present time action of a motionless person. There he sits. He's motionless. In some sphere, he is not free to communicate. Why isn't he free to communicate? Because he cannot find out what is the desirable action. What is the desirable withhold? And what's the undesirable action? What's the undesirable withhold? See, he doesn't know what these things are now. He cannot any longer differentiate amongst good actions and good withholds and bad actions and bad withholds. And he is no longer master of his own communication, his own reach. So therefore he has to be very careful. Reach. He has to be very careful to reach. While he's being very careful not to reach, he must not reach, you see, because he might reach, but if he doesn't reach, then he wouldn't reach. And you get your average talk. Average person. This is not an insane person I'm talking about. This is just the average bank that's composed of. The fellow doesn't know what he mustn't reach, and he doesn't know what he must hold. And he's forgotten to reach, and he's forgotten that he must withhold. But the pattern stays with it as caution. And it's interesting that all that psychoanalysis ever trained anybody to be was cautious. The more psychoanalyzed, the more cautious they got. That's the difficulty. Now, this other fellow who is trained obsessively to reach, he's trained obsessively to reach, he's got to reach, he's got to reach, he's got to reach, he's got to reach. He never has a chance to do anything else but reach. And he must never withhold on this subject. He must never stay home from work. Never stay home. Never, never, never. And now he hasn't got a job. And not having a job, what does he now have? He has compulsion to go. But he doesn't know what he's supposed to go to. He doesn't know where he's supposed to go or why he's supposed to go or what he's supposed to arrive at or anything else. He just knows that he must go. You see, he's got to leave home. And you'll find that these leaving homenesses and things like that are cyclic. But an insane person is only insane sometimes between 2 and 4 o'clock in the afternoon. A person who has insomnia very often cannot sleep between 1 and 4 in the morning. See? Well, 1 and 4 in the morning, someplace along the line, 1 and 4 in the morning is a wakeful period of something or other, and they might have been a one-night watchman sometime or another, you know, and they always had to be there at 1 o'clock. There's no telling why they had to be there, but it was necessary to reek at a particular time. So they feel agitated, because they don't know where they're supposed to go, and they feel nervous. There isn't anybody you know that doesn't have a nervous period in the day sometimes. If you sorted it out carefully, you'd find that some period of the day they became active, and another period of the day, at least one, they became very quiet. You don't know anybody who doesn't do this. In the morning, they have to get active. Evening, they go to bed and become active. Why? I don't know. But a lot of people have a lot of trouble sleep because they're accustomed to sleep or their sleeping hours compare with some other part of the planet or some other time area somewhere on some other planet. And they're trying to go to sleep and wake up in a period that they're most accustomed to sleep and wake up because they're training a pattern of going to sleep, waking up, is that training pattern of, let us say, Los Angeles. And they're now living in London. There's 8 hours difference. You see? 8 hours difference. So, actually, in Los Angeles, you ought to be getting up around 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. But you see, there's an entirely different time in London for 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. So, one just about goes to bed and becomes very wakeful. The second they go to bed, they become wakeful. Well, it may be coinciding with some period when they should be getting up. You see how dizzy all this can be, see? Well, what is all that? Let's characterize that with what it is. This is strictly, totally, and only a confusion of a reach and a withhold according to the time and place and action. They don't know whether to reach or withdraw and why or when or something. In other words, they have lost knowingness over the action. Now, in order to restore control over one's communication or not communication, receiving communication or not receiving communication, control over one reach or not reach, be reached or not be reached, one must get these unknowingnesses out of the road, or the person will appear nervous sometimes to a point of total apathy and collapse when you ask them to do something or other. Suddenly you are not able. They just feel very nervous about this. I'm not quite sure why they feel nervous about this. As a matter of fact, they don't go into it deeply as saying, I feel nervous about this. They're not that analytical. They're supposed to go down to the grocery store, and they sit down on the porch, and they stay there for 2 hours. But yet, that's never happened to them before, but the next time they go down to the grocery store, they go down to the grocery store all right. They have any idea of lingering. It never occurred to them, you see, they were going down to the grocery store. They should have been going to another part of the world. You see how confused all this gets? How confused a person can be. Now, in order to aberrate somebody on this subject, you establish compulsion to reach or compulsion to withdraw or withhold. You establish this as an absolute necessity. And then shift them in time and place so as to bring about no necessity for this of any kind whatsoever, so that they forget it and so that they don't remember what they're supposed to do. In other words, make an unknowingness out of the whole thing, bury it. Somehow or another, cloud the thing over, and after that, why, they've to some degree had it. But doing this once wouldn't aberrate it. After it had been done several hundred thousand times, though, it would begin to tell. Begin to tell. A person would begin to get the idea that they didn't quite know what they were doing. That would become rather apparent even to them. Have you ever seen anybody that knew exactly what he should have been doing, knew exactly what he ought to be doing, gets all geared up to do it, get out all the equipment to do it, and then doesn't touch anything? Ever see anybody do that? Well, he's now, I'm supposed to, worked right up to the point where it was stimulated, the withhold. Okay, he goes right straight up. He's going into action. Now he's supposed to withhold it. Did you ever see anybody sit down, decide to relax, sit down, take it easy, have a good rest, turn around and they're tearing all over the house, you know, and the walls are caving in practically from the amount of running and fussing and scattering and changing the furniture and so forth? You ever notice anybody do anything like that? Well, they've just hit the wrong side of things. Okay? Their compulsions to withhold or to reach are not in agreement, so that they sit down to withhold. In other words, they're going to withhold themselves from action, they're going to rest now. And hit so close to a borderline, some kind of a restimulator, causes them to go into action, have decided to withhold, causes them to go into action. Now, when a person gets very bad off, any decision to act causes them to withhold. They have no differentiation at all. Any decision to act causes them to withhold. You've seen them. They get elected to office all the time. Government program. That's a very, very good one. A government program. They're going to do this. And then the letter sits in the out basket, you see, for 6 weeks. And then it goes into another in basket and sits there for 7 months. And then it goes over to appropriations, and appropriations dawdles with it for a year or two. That's just from the fact that the government is guilty, collectively, of overt acts. You never have an effective government where you have tremendous numbers of overt acts mixed up in the government that are being withheld. All right. Do you see, then, that the whole subject of withholds and security checking is intimately wound up with the action and inaction of people and the determinism and of people and their failure to be self-determined and so forth? You take some bird, and he's in a total hypnotic trance. He comes in, and you say, well, close the door. And the door is closed. And you tell them, close the door. And they go over, and they pick up an imaginary doorknob and shut the imaginary door so that they will comply with what you said. You set them down in a chair, and they're in a chair. You stood them up, they'll stand up. In the sane asylums, they stretch them out, they lie down, they're fine. You pick up one arm, put it in the air, it'll stay there. Catatonic schizophrenia. It's marvelous. They're just like tallow or clay or something. Anything you can do, you know. You get this. You want to watch it. They have eye flutter and various things. And if you were to suggest anything, this isn't why we say things to people on the scene. But if you were to suggest to this person that a battleship was his terminal. Battleship, yeah. Boy, you're going to get a battle registering. Because you shoved a battleship right into his skull, and he's got the battleship registering, and that's it. And that's all that's there. You said it, so therefore it's it. I have trouble with that. I sometimes assess people's terminals and so forth, and you can't get them away from them with shotguns. Sometimes. That doesn't mean those people are hypnotic. They know it was probably right. Oddly enough, it usually is right. Good thing to do is take all invalidations and evaluations and all overts off it and strip it down where nothing registers with regard to it and still see if it's it. That's the only way you'd recover that. But this gives trouble every once in a while. Where an auditor has suggested a terminal or where an auditor with altitude has found the terminal, the PC isn't about to give it up. Now, you're not in that range right now with 3D crisscross. It isn't as hard as that. Somewhat amusing to me to see some of the terminals I have assessed coming up again on 3D crisscross. There they are. They were there all the time. But here's your action. This person is totally susceptible to any re-stimulation. Now, get off the idea the person's totally susceptible to suggestion and how nice that is, because that's for the birds. The person is totally susceptible to any inflowing action of any kind. The person is totally susceptible. In other words, they re-stimulate, bang. Their bank is so rigged that they see a spotted wall, they get measles. And anything that happens to them in society, they are instantly reaction, is to have that with them. They re-stimulate at once. And they are very, very bad off. Now, a gradient scale of that is the average person. He sees a few things and they re-stimulate him where he's on a total effect basis. Now, what's the matter with that total effect basis? There's only one thing wrong with that basis. Only one thing. And that is the person has no command over his reach and withdraw. He has lost this. He cannot then be master of his own actions. He, of course, then is never governor of his own fate. And, of course, cannot be sensible about what he does. IQ is the degree that a person can observe, understand actions. That's all, than the withholding of actions, a person's grip of this situation. You say, well, it could have a lot more ramifications, a lot more prettinesses about it, and so forth, and it'd be much more complicated than that, but it isn't really. It's one's government of one's environment. Now, we are strange as if we considered Scientology a philosophy, which it is not, we would find ourselves almost alone in this one idea. That men should have any self-determinism. Because others, falling short of this, have looked on this point. It's an important point. They've fallen short of a criminal compelled to commit crimes and then be unable to any part of the overt act of committing crimes or doing any criminal. They say the answer, and that is to make the criminal withhold his crimes harder. Now, peculiar as it hasn't worked on itself. Compel it not with members to do anything. On his way to Times Square. Well, hello, where are you going? Well, I'm going down to Times Square, taking clothes off. And you say, well, all right, I'll be down at 4 o'clock at the police station, bail you out. And you'll say, well, thank you very much. Much relieved now. He goes down to Times Square and takes his clothes off. It's because he's withheld it so far that the withhold has failed. And it becomes a compulsion. So the action which is severely withheld very often reverses and becomes a compulsive action. A person knows he cannot withhold the action and therefore has to do it. And that is the danger of this philosophy, that the more good total withholds we have around, the better off we all are. If you don't know this mechanism of overts and withholds, and you don't know why people act this way, of course you're liable to fall into this other philosophy as the only possible remedy. It's not a very good remedy. Now, there's your basis of action. There's your basis of action in human beings. One, he does not know what his compulsive actions are, or his must-dos are. He doesn't know what these things are. Therefore, he doesn't know what he is withholding. And not knowingness is the common denominator of all withholds and overts which are operative on the individual. Those things which are operative on the individual are always unknown to the individual. I might even teach you that someday. I keep telling you, and so forth. You're still always willing to look in a known area. I know some PCs that have been audited on their mother-in-law for years and years and years and years and are still having trouble with the mother-in-law, and it's never occurred to any auditor that the trouble couldn't possibly be the mother-in-law if the PC knew all about it. PC knows about it, can't be the trouble. Now that gets in your road in security checking, that fact. Because he can know about it without you knowing about it. But that's half a no. And that isn't a good enough no. See? That's just half a no. So you don't know about it, but he knows about it. And he'll get upset if you don't let yourself in on it. And get the missed withhold phenomena, which is the most serious phenomena that stands in the road of security checking. Might teach you that someday, too. I taught FCDC recently. Man, I got a dispatch this morning. Boy, wild, man. Absolutely wild. They've been going around tearing people's missed withholds. That's all they've been doing. They haven't been getting people's withholds off. They've been taking people's missed withholds off. Takes them one or two sessions per staff member. It's going gorgeously. All of a sudden, people are going back and straightening up their departments and furs flying in all directions. Even getting cocky, you know. They don't say they don't care whether you people are coming back from St. Hill or not. But they say, well, even if you don't, they fight, make it. You've been gone too long. Well, anyhow, you have to go home pretty quick. Reestablish your altitude.
This lecture is continued on side two of this cassette.